Hi, welcome to the Barry Nation podcast, where we support the bariatric community with humor, humility, and honesty. I'm April.
And I'm Jason.
And today, you guys, you are not seeing a glitch on your screen. The one and only Dr. Dovick is joining us today. Good morning.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. Good morning. Good morning. This is so much fun. I love talking to you both and Barry Nation. And buckle up, guys. We have a lot to talk about.
Oh my gosh, do we ever. So we know that this month in Barry Nation, if you are listening or watching in February of 2022, we are talking about self-love. And sometimes for us, before and after bariatric surgery, that's a very difficult concept for us to understand. So what we want to talk to you today about, Dr. Dovick, is how we can practice self-love, you know, using that as a lens to really understand what we can do to set ourselves up for success before and after our bariatric surgery, right? Self-love is not always about bubble baths and walks on the beach, right? Self-love is really about doing these things that help us love ourselves that sometimes, you know, maybe can feel like a chore or like something that, oh, I've been told to do. But if we're using that lens of self-love, not only are these things that our doctors have told us to do, but it's a way that we can practice love for ourselves. So, right, kind of a different lens, but you know, another way to come at a topic that can be difficult for some of us to practice. So we're very excited to have this conversation with you today.
Have you ever wished you had a dedicated bariatric buddy to help guide you along your weight loss journey? Well, guess what? You can find that person. Patient Partner connects pre-op bariatric patients to vetted post-op bariatric patients who help and encourage each other along the way. Patient Partner helps you feel more empowered, prepared, and supported through your surgery by connecting you to a community of recovered patients so you can move forward with confidence. Click the link in our Instagram bio to learn how you can take advantage of this free service. And if you don't follow us on Instagram, you are missing out. And follow Patient Partner at patient_partner.
Oh, for sure. There's a lot to say about that. And I love the theme with Valentine's Day in February. And it's not talked about with this angle a lot too. So we're going to get, you're right. It is not just romantic bubble baths. It's a lot more than that.
It is. So before we dive into the conversation, we would love to give you the floor to just introduce yourself to our friends and followers that maybe don't know you yet. So is there something that you'd like to tell us about your personal life or your professional life so that we can get to know you a little bit more?
Sure. So my name is Dr. Dovick on Instagram. That is DrDovec, all one word. And I have been a bariatric surgeon as an attending level since 2013. So almost 9 years now, I've been getting to primarily focus on weight loss. That's all I do now. I don't do any general surgery. That is what I do by trade. And I love it. And I've always loved it from the moment I saw it when I was a medical student back in Huntington, West Virginia. I fell in love with the profession on day one. It was just something that it's like when you know, and it just really lured me into it. So I finished my training. I was in my first big girl job for over 8 years. And then Advent Health in Orlando, Florida came a knocking. And ultimately, I decided to uproot my life, my family, my partner, all of us decided that this was and is the opportunity of a lifetime. And I believe it was every sense of my being. And so I leapt. We took each other's hands and we made the jump. And this summer is when we started the practice, and we're getting some momentum and we're getting going, and it's been really exciting. I offer all virtual appointments, so it's very easy. I'm really into improving access and breaking down barriers and just making people feel very comfortable in their care. And in my free time, I am a wife to my husband Aaron, and I have 3 kids: Adrian, age 5; Evan, age 4; and Liv, age 3. Yes, I have a 5, 4, and 3-year-old. So I didn't know if you knew that, but life is crazy and wild, but we're in Orlando, so there's lots of fun things to do.
I cannot imagine. I mean, Jason is a parent and a grandparent, and I know how busy he is with his family. So, you know, to have your profession and, you know, taking on the Advent Health, you know, world is a huge monumental undertaking. And the fact that you've been able to balance it so deftly is amazing. And then somehow you find time to join us on a podcast. So, wow.
This is what it's all about. The work you're doing, I'm not just, you know, blowing smoke. I'm telling you, the work that you're doing and just getting the message out there. That's what we said in our dream event in December. You know, I talked to the the crowd, if you will, afterwards in person. And I just said, you know, it is all about you guys going out there and making this more popular and more normal and just, you know, changing the dialogue, the narrative about it to, you know, help so many other people get these life-saving procedures. And that's, that is what I feel like my mission is in life.
You know, Jason and I started what was East to West, you know, 2.5, yes, almost three years ago. And we did so because we really felt that that patient perspective was missing. We didn't have an opportunity to connect with people who had been through it. It's one thing to love your surgeon and have confidence in them and move forward knowing that this is the right decision for you. But if your surgeon hasn't experienced what you're about to experience or is going through that recovery process, you're missing a layer. And it's not a knock to anybody because you do your job deftly well. Like, oh my gosh, you kept us alive. You provide us the tools. But then when you're on the other side of it, it's like, I don't know how to live my life as a thinner person or as a healthy person. And I know, Jason, you had the honor of walking the red carpet. You and Sarah were there at the Dream event. So will you maybe give us a little bit of insight into like what you felt or what you experienced at Dr. Dovick's event there?
It was one of the first times, you know, other than retreat, where it was an event that was solely put on for us by people that understand us, by an event organizer that was, you know, there's a difference in, you know, I say this a lot, there's a difference where people are trying to break into the bariatric community for personal gain, monetary gain. They just want a way to weasel in to be able to get money out of the bariatric community because it's an untapped market. Well, there's a lot of difference when somebody puts on the care and the time to put on such an amazing event specifically to celebrate the work that we have done. It was an honor for me to be there.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, you know, and as we've talked about before in some other live events we've done with you, Dr. Dovick, it's a very powerful and hopeful place to be in when bariatric bodies and stories are the main event, right? For so many years, patients lived in the shadows because it was the thing that was like, oh, they had bariatric surgery, right? Mm-hmm. It's whispered amongst book clubs and things like that. Right. And now it's like, you know, there are people who are willing to publicly say, I've had bariatric surgery. This is a medical decision that I lived. It's a medical tool that I'm accessing to live at a weight that's healthy for me. And I'm no longer afraid to share my story. And when those stories and those experiences are partnered on channels and with organizations that are equally not afraid to say, there's nothing wrong with bariatric surgery. It's a medical tool. Here are the stories of thousands of people who have gone through it, and to not shy away from the difficult parts of the story, right? We know people who have lost their lives after surgery or during this procedure. So we understand the risk that's being taken. But we also understand the risk that we will run into if we continue to live our lives as obese or super morbidly obese people. So as a bariatric patient, you're constantly making this judgment call of, okay, is this the path that I need to go? And to have the resources and the education before surgery just means that we're going into it as best prepared as we possibly can. As patients, we also know that life on the other side, you are not prepared for it. And there isn't much that you can do to prepare for it. But, you know, having these types of resources like podcasts and these in communities and the Berry Nation community, it really can help you find that happy, healthy weight and provide you with the resources to get you through those difficult moments. So it's just amazing to see what the community is doing and how it's growing to serve the need of a population that's tired of living in the shadows.
So well said, as always, April. I couldn't agree more. And that's what this is about. So I am thrilled to be here.
Woohoo! All right. So before we dive into the conversation, I'll just let you guys know, if you're watching on YouTube, another great venue, if listening is not your jam, we do have a very fabulous YouTube channel. So check us out there. But, you know, success before and after bariatric surgery does not come easy. You really have to commit to making these big changes. So our goal today is that we really want to know from your surgical perspective, what can patients do before and after their procedure to find that last lasting success. And then Jason and I are just going to chime in and say what we did as patients in conjunction with our own medical professionals to find that success. So really, the goal is we're going to look at this through the self-love lens. What is self-love? And then how can we practice it in our pre and post-op experience? So if you're ready to dive in.
Let's do it. So self-love, you know, you've heard this many times and it's very cliched, but I want you, if you're listening, to really pause and to think about what I'm going to say. I mean, when you're on an airplane, you always hear about putting the oxygen mask on yourself before you help anybody else. I just finished my office hours for this morning. I saw 10 new patients, and one after the next says the same thing, that they have not taken the time to really care about their health. They're helping everybody else. They're making sure they're taking their kids to their activities, or they're helping their spouse or their boyfriend or their loved one or their elderly parents. And I mean, there's so many layers of stories, and yes, there's human connectivity, and that's part of it. And that's just being, you know, a loving person and friend and family member and colleague, all that stuff. I get it. But somewhere along the lines, I think a lot of people lose themselves. And that's where it's really, it's hard. I feel like a lot of people are ashamed to say, hey, I'm waving the white flag and I need help. And I think that is something, again, that puts this, like you said, like, oh, we had to hide and maybe to whisper amongst it in book clubs and things, is that like, you don't want to talk about it because it's like, oh, well, that's selfish. Were you really that big? There's so many little layers of like people just being ignorant to this and not understanding all that it involves and the root of why you want to do it. So before surgery, what can you do to love yourself is to first commit to yourself, to consistently show up for yourself and to realize that your health has to be your number one priority. Otherwise, you are of no use to anyone else. And you have to know that, but you have to believe it. You have to believe it. You can't make excuses. I'm not going to go to the gym today because of X, Y, and Z. No, I'm going to commit to myself first. And you have to do that. So that's an incredibly important mindset to have when you're going into it. And I know it's anxiety provoking. And I know it's a lot to be sitting at that initial consultation. Like I mentioned, I do all of mine virtual, but there's always that feeling when you're walking into a practice as well. Like I always hated watching my patients in the waiting room on the initial consult. You could see them out there like uncomfortable in their seats, pretending to read a magazine, pretending to play on their phone. When you really just saw like, nobody wants to be sitting in the waiting room where it says like obesity on the door, like the obesity treatment center, like, oh God, this is a lot. So if you're feeling that way, know that you're normal and that nobody wants to particularly need my skill set. And I get that. And I just hope that wherever you go, the surgeons and their teams, their supporting staff treats you with the compassion that you deserve in making this very difficult, sensitive decision, again, for you, for your health. So I think we'll talk before surgery, and then I want your input, and then I'll dive into the after surgery. I think in order to really be able to improve yourself, you number one have to know yourself. So sometimes if you know that you eat when you're lonely, or you eat when you're stressed out, or when you're just sitting there bored at work, because we're all working remotely now, when you're just constantly nibbling, or maybe you eat to celebrate, or maybe you don't eat enough and you realize at the end of the day, oh, I haven't eaten anything, and you eat all this stuff. So like you have to, I think, first kind of, you know, be super real and honest with yourself and come to the table with, okay, I'm addicted to regular soda. I always eat pretzels. I eat a whole bag of pretzels a day. I don't even know how it's empty and I'm going to the store again. Like just look at your trends and be able to use that to help to improve yourself. And I think a big part of that is potentially even getting the help of others. Support is massive. And maybe that support might look like a mental health provider, a therapist, a counselor, a social worker, a psychiatrist. Maybe you need medications. So I think the biggest thing is all up here is the mental game. What do you guys think about, you know, when you decide like, all right, I got to like look at my behaviors here and make some major changes. How do you feel like that conversation with yourself went when you were deciding to get into this?
I know for me, I didn't think about those things before surgery, and I wish that I had. I think I just knew that I had tried everything else with Fidelity and nothing else had worked. And this was the one thing that I had not tried. And because I had a connection with somebody who had bariatric surgery, I had that go-to person to go, I'm wondering, I'm curious. And to see their success and to see how they were going through it was like, that was the thing. But having those conversations was not something that I necessarily did. And I know, Dr. Dovick, you said something about like, you just have to get real with yourself. I know, Jason, you had that moment yourself with your kids.
Yeah, it was extremely hard for me going to tour the UCF campus. I've told this story before, just not being able to make the tour with my son. My son was excited, like ready to go do all the things. And I couldn't make it 20 feet without having to take a break. I was 470 pounds, having a hard time. My back hurt, my legs hurt, my knees hurt, everything about it. I was struggling. And I literally had to stop in an air conditioned room and sit down and stop the tour for myself and let them go ahead because I couldn't finish it. And to me, that was selling him short. And that was selling, you know, my wife didn't sign up to take care of somebody at 43 years old at the time. You know, she's having to take care of me like I'm 90. And that's not, you know, that just wasn't what anybody signed up for. And I had to realize that I had to stop being selfish and making the decisions I was making. And that came with a lot of very hard conversations, not only with myself, but listening to doctors tell me too, because I met a cardiologist that didn't know me 5 minutes and was like, you ever thought about bariatric surgery? And I was like, I was offended. Like, I wasn't giant and didn't need it. Like, who are you talking to? Like me? Like, I didn't need it. Like, my blood wasn't running like chocolate milk. And I sit there and think about those types of things now. And I'm like, I can't believe I didn't listen to those things years before that or even look for it. But I also go back to, had I had done it earlier than I was ready to do it, I don't know that I would have been as successful as I've been able to be because I wasn't ready yet.
Now, Jason, why were you 470 pounds? Why?
Because I ate. And I ate to excess all the time. It wasn't mine wasn't about the times or the like whether it would be a stressor for me to eat. My thing was mass quantity all the time. Like I wanted to be a competitive eater at one point. I just everything about was the biggest, whatever the biggest, most outlandish dish was at whatever restaurant we went to. I thought I had to order that and I thought I had to try to eat that. And everything was about like I remember actively fighting with my wife about why I needed to order a 1 pound burger. That had a double 1 pound burger, which would have been 2 pounds of meat and these giant hubcap sized buns that are on it because I needed that because I'm not going to go out to, I remember telling her, I'm not going to go out to eat and pay money so that I can leave the restaurant hungry.
Very true. And I think in April, let me ask you the same question. Why were you overweight?
Yeah, I am a perfectionist by trade. That's just the part of who I am. And I strove and still do in a lot of ways. I'm working on this. This is my mindset work. I want to be perfect in everything that I do. And I knew that that was not possible. So food and my size and shape was the only area of my life that I could not be perfect in. And I allowed that. That was my only outlet. And that was something that I could rely on 24/7 because no matter where you go, there's food. So I can be perfect. And my career excelled, my marriage, you know, I had checked off all the boxes despite being 326 pounds. I was here to prove to the world that it didn't matter. And along the way, I lost sight of really of who I was and what I was and what my values were. And I let that perfectionism drive what I did. And food was the one area that I could zone out in, that I didn't have to be perfect, that it didn't matter. And if I didn't have food, I probably would have crumbled. It would have been worse than it really was.
I think those are two very, very unique and different perspectives on it. I think, you know, Jason, I feel like you're, you know, how did I get to 470 and is a very typical story for a man. Men will be like, I can eat a lot. And at some point you almost take on this persona of this, like, as we heard, this big guy, you know, like, that's like, I wanted to show people like, oh man, you ever watch Man Versus Food? That Jason, man, he should be on that show. And you almost took it like, this is like kind of my identity, it's the badge identity. Of honor.
Yes. Right, which is why this journey is so difficult, because as soon as you realize or you've made the commitment to not living that way, you don't know who you are. You lose that sense, and it's a panic. And your very first instinct, your reaction is to go to food or to drink.
Yeah.
And you can't, and it's a black hole of despair for a lot of people, because you just don't know what to do because you've never taken the time. I literally, for this podcast episode, I looked up the definition of self-love, and it is so apropos to exactly what we're talking about. I just Googled it, and the definition is regard for one's own well-being and happiness, chiefly considered as a desirable rather than this narcissistic characteristic. So thinking about your well-being and happiness before anybody else's is the definition of self-love. Who's done that? Especially when you're a parent or a grandparent, or you have that type of identity, or you're perfectionist, or you're a people pleaser. But right, if we take care of everybody else's needs, we're out of the energy to deal with our own. Right. And the first thing that we turn to is food for that comfort or for that checkout, or it's so ingrained in who we are as a person that it just doesn't, you know, the weight doesn't matter, even though you don't want to weigh what you weigh and you're almost upset or disgusted or disappointed in what your physical being has become. You don't have the energy or the capacity to deal with it above and beyond what you're already doing.
Yes. Food is undeniably comfortable. I mean, it is. And even when you're like driving home from a hard day or, you know, a great day, like no matter what, it does just feel like, what are we eating? Where are we going? What are you going to have? Like you're just constantly thinking about it. It is, I know that, you know, a lot of my patients, when they talk to me at the initial consult, when you ask these questions, I'm like, be real, you know? And a lot of people get very emotional because it's the first time they're not pushing something and hiding it away. You know, I heard this story the other day and I thought, boy, how does this apply to what we're doing? And it was this woman who, she was having this house party and she was trying to clean up for it. And so she was like, you know what? I'm going to just put everything in my oven, like all the mail and the things, because there's a lot of cubic space in there. I can hide things. I'm going to push it in this, close up the oven, and I'm going to hide my mess. I'm not going to tell anybody, you know, really what I'm doing. So then somebody else comes to the party and they have some food that they need to heat up and they just put the oven on. And then all of a sudden you start smelling stuff and all of a sudden the alarms are going off. Smoke is coming out of the oven. All the papers and the mail and all the things that were in there are now on fire. It's a huge deal. It's a huge thing. And it's this whole thing where we're all trying so desperately hard to hide our mess, but instead we should be confessing our mess. We should be, again, confessing it first and foremost with yourself. And you should also be, you know, putting it out to the world that I need help, that it's not a sign of weakness. It's actually pretty courageous and brave for me to say out there that this is what I'm doing. This is why I'm doing it. And the way that you two, again, have that perspective on your own selves and like, you did some deep things, because it is hard to reflect to that degree on yourself to say, why did I get there? And how do I make sure I never come back here? And it's going to be a daily effort to make sure that doesn't happen. That's hard. That's tough.
Well, and it's crazy too for people pleasers, which a lot of us are, because we're just happy that people want to be around us. So we want to feed whatever we can to feed those relationships so that they don't go away, so that we're left with nothing. Because the last thing a people pleaser wants, or people in our position pre-op want, is to be left alone with ourselves, because a lot of us don't really like ourselves pre-op. So we don't want to be alone with that person. So we constantly feed those types of things. And a lot of times, you know, it's good that you actually have the opportunity to ask and get the real answers out of people, because a lot of times nobody asks people pleasers how we're doing. It's all about how we can please them and how we can do stuff for them. And then once we actually need something, they're busy or they got to go, they don't want to hear that. So it's good that you actually have the opportunity to get those answers out, because a lot of people don't really know how to talk about it. Like we tell them, like, you got to be able to name those feelings and talk about it and really be in that moment. They don't know how, because they've never been able to.
Yeah, I know. And a lot of people hide behind being the funny guy, being the one that's, you know, jumping up and down, wiggling your belly. And, you know, I have actually like three patients right now who are real life Santa Clauses, and they are worried about their profession. And that's sort of like, you know, my wife likes me snuggly, and my, you know, there's just so many things. And you think that by doing this, you're going to disappoint everyone else, which, You cannot, my friends. If you're doing this, you got to do it for number one.
Well, and the reason that I took so long to commit to having bariatric surgery is I was terrified that I was going to change as a person, that if I lost the weight, that that who I am and my being would not be the same, or that people wouldn't like me if I looked different. And that was something I was not willing to risk. But, you know, as your story so beautifully demonstrates, we're all trying to hide the things in the oven. And the bummer part about obesity is that you can hide other addictions. You can hide other struggles. Not if I have a shopping or addiction or like a sex or gambling, even drugs or alcohol, I can hide that. Mm-hmm. With my obesity, there is no hiding that, because everybody knows my size indicates that I'm struggling with food on some level, right? Or I've got something medical going on, and there's no hiding that. So I'm going to overcompensate for that, because everybody knows that I'm struggling with to excel in this area, or to be this person, or to be that person. But everybody knows that there's no hiding anything when it comes to obesity. And I think that, you know, one of the things that I think is the number one thing that people can do pre-op to be successful is to finally, for the first time and probably ever or a very long time, be honest with your medical professionals, whether that be your surgeon or your therapist or your social worker. We have been dishonest with ourselves and others for so long, it has gotten us to that point of desperation. It's because we have been lacking that honesty with ourselves and with others that we have been, right? That the dishonesty is that shoving the things in the oven. And then when that oven gets turned on, your house is going to burn down. And we are all at that place where we can smell the smoke. And if we are not honest with people in our medical community that will help us make us through this journey, we're not going to be honest on the backside. And the work that you are avoiding is the exact work that you need to do to find this freedom. You think that work is going to kill you. You think you're going to discover something awful about yourself. Mm-hmm. And you're just not. It's going to be hard, and you are going to come across some things that you are not happy about or prepared for, but it's not going to dehumanize you. That's the work that you need to do if you want to find success.
That is the key to it. You know, I've heard, like I said, I've heard a lot of stories, and everyone's story is just uniquely compelling. And sometimes it's like emotionally exhausting to do what I do, because I do get like really sucked into a lot of these conversations. I'll tell you, I just saw someone fairly recently, and this story like always chokes me up. So I hope I will not cry right now, but it's just something to put things into such a perspective. And I hope that this helps somebody out listening. So I had a patient who told me that about 5 years ago or so, they were getting more out of breath, but they knew they put on a few pounds. And then one day they found themselves like about to collapse, knowing something is not right, chest pain, all this stuff, ends up in the emergency room. A battery of tests later finds out that they are in full blown congestive heart failure, young woman, and ultimately needs to be immediately listed for a heart transplant. So she gets the heart transplant 2 days later in this like ridiculous, like most people are listed for a long time. And do you need it? Do you not? Like that sick, that like close to dying, gets the heart transplant. She then does well, and there's some anti-rejection meds. So she's, you know, she has, isn't now on steroids and different things like that. Does phenomenally from the heart transplant portion, but ultimately gains a little bit of weight. Well, 3 years later, she gets a call from what would have been the heart donor's parents. And so she got a heart from a 15-year-old boy who was involved in a silly accident of his friend accidentally shot him, and ultimately he killed him. He shot him in his head, and this poor boy died. So what would have been the boy's 18th birthday, she was invited to go to his house because his family wanted to hear his heart beating. And so she decided in that moment that no matter what, she knew that she needed to make that heart beat on for as long as possible. And that is something where it's like, wow, life is so fragile. You know, this unfortunate accident that could take someone that was such a bright future and all these things. I mean, this kid had all kinds of things going on for him. And just to have his family be like, never forget this gift that we're given to be here and to live this one life that we have. And I hope that that resonates with some of you to be like, I need my own heart to keep beating for as long as possible.
No kids, grandkids, your life is needed on this planet. Mm. Your story needs to be told. You have a gift that somebody needs. And if you don't have the health to share that gift, the world is missing out. Mm. It just is.
It is.
And if we can get to that point of self-love, right? Let me go back to that definition, right? Where we are considering our wellness and our happiness, and we're putting that in front of somebody else's for one time in our life, we can actually be that person that passes that gift on. But if we're not practicing that self-love, we're never going to get there.
Mm-mm, no, but please hear this. This message is, I love this. I love this theme. I love this, this important topic of discussion to reflect. This podcast, if you just hang up and you go about your day, you don't really do some deep, deep rooted thinking and reflecting and meditating and connecting spiritually with whatever you need to do, then, you're wasting your time. And I think, this is important. Very, very important.
It is. So let's switch gears to the post-op side of things. We're really excited to understand what we as patients can do kind of at some big milestones to ensure our lasting success. So we kind of broke it down here. We want to know, what can patients do right after surgery? So the first couple of days, their first week post-op, a month post-op, 6 months, 1 year, and then 2+ years. So Dr. Dovick, we'd love to know, what do you think are like the, what's the number one thing that patients can do in those timeframes from your surgical perspective? And then Jason and I are going to share what we did as patients to help us find that long-term success.
Oh, so, I love it.
Right? So we thought, oh, this is kind of cool, because people always kind of want to know, like, right? Those are some pretty good, like, you know, time markers. Okay, so the first one, right after surgery, what can patients do basically from the moment that they wake up until a few days after surgery to find success?
So the very first moment has just a little bit to do with the expectations that are set. So I tell patients, listen, the moment you wake up, those eyes open, you got to have that thought in your head, can I walk yet? The sooner you walk, the more you walk, the faster and better your recovery. You're going to have gas pains. They're no joke. You know this. It's going to feel like a pressure, like I'm elbowing you in the left upper quadrant, the rib cage area. It's going to feel like chest pain, pressure. Whoa, what have I done? This is legit. So what I tell patients is to just have the mindset that you must get up, you must move. The more you move, the sooner you move, the better. So that's the one big thing. I also have, like, just make sure they have their pain meds set up. Tylenol Extra Strength, Gas-X, and movement are your best friends. I do give them a small prescription to go home with pain medications. And then I also have patients, almost all of them, go home as an outpatient. So I'm one of the only surgeons in the country that really is doing this. 95%+ of my patients will have surgery, we'll say Monday morning, and then by Monday afternoon, they're already at home. So 2 to 3 hours after they wake up from the recovery room, my patients go home. And so I make sure that they have their whole setup ready. People recover better in their own environments when they're in control of it. So for example, how should you sleep? So I say you should get like a bunch of pillows, like maybe even 10 pillows, or even sleep in a recliner, so you're more upright as well. That takes the pressure off. You should also have available to you, you know, all of the diet progression. So our diet, and remember, follow your program's diet. But what we do is 1 week, immediately 1 week of full liquids. The second week is pureed or smooth food consistency. Weeks 3 and 4 are soft foods. And then after 4 weeks, you're back to a regular diet. So make sure you have your whole setup of full liquids around you, that you have your shakes, you have your different clear liquids, the flavoring that you like, the sugar-free Jell-O. A big saving grace is sugar-free popsicles to help you to stay hydrated. A lot of people would just let those drip, 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 drip down their throat. You'll eat like 10 sugar-free popsicles the first day to get your fluids. It's hard to sometimes sip on the fluids. And then just have that mindset of, all right, I've got to get my fluids in, because dehydration is the number 1 through 1 billion reason people come back to the emergency room or urgent care is dehydration. So try to strive for 64 ounces of fluid. And then number 2 is trying to get your protein in. And then number 3, make sure that you have purchased your multivitamin, your calcium citrate, whatever your program recommends, so that everything is just ready. The key to success is getting organized, is setting expectations, kind of knowing it's not going to be the most fun, and that you're going to be able to, you know, just have the mindset that I got to move, I got to drink, I got to pee, and this sucks, but it's expected, and this too shall pass, and fake it till I make it. Like, it's all about the mentality. What do you guys think for that those first few days, the gas pains, the difficulty in sipping, the weirdness, the feelings, all of that?
Yeah, Jason, what's your recommendation?
I actually didn't have any problems sipping. I was good like that. Like, thankfully I didn't. Like, I was, the only reason I was having a hard time finishing my water is I kept falling asleep. So when I would wake up and they'd be standing there, they'd be like, you didn't get your ding. And I'd just grab it and drink it and be good. But I'm allergic to pain meds, so I didn't have any pain meds. So it was just the Tylenol for me. But when I woke up, I was like, I got to move, because I have mine was in the hospital for 24 hours. So you had to, you could go home the next day, but only if you were walking, moving, and getting your liquids in. So as soon as I cracked my eyes open, I was like, disconnect my legs, I got to go. So I grabbed my IV and we made it out into the hallway. And then after that, I made 3 laps the first day, and then I made 4 more laps that next morning before the doctor came in to see me, because I wanted to tell him that I had that many in, so I could be like, hey, let me out.
Seriously, get out of there as soon as you can, my friends.
Yes. And that was my thing. So, I mean, when I got home, same thing, like what you said, I had everything set up, slept sitting up, so it was good. But yeah, my key was just move as much as I could.
Awesome.
And I think mine was moving. That was huge. But the number one thing is that as soon as I experienced something and I checked in with my bariatric friends and I was like, I've got this sensation or something's going on, and I couldn't confirm or validate what I was going through with them, then I would call my nurse. And I cannot recommend that enough. Be an advocate for your own health. If something wonky is going on, call your surgeon. Do not be afraid to ask those questions. Get the answer right away so that you can get back to your regularly scheduled routine, right?
So true.
Right? And people have such a hard time doing it. It's like, you literally paid them for this service. You need to call them and ask them your questions. Like,
for sure. And for us, like, we want to make it easy for you. So sometimes you might be like, I haven't pooped in 2 days. Do I need to call them at midnight and ask them that? Some people do, and that's okay. But we want to make it so, like, for example, like, if you want to ask me a question, you can DM me on Instagram and I'll write you back myself fairly soon after. Or we give you our email addresses, our phone numbers, our fax numbers. If you're an Advent Health employee, you can Teams message us. Like, that's the whole thing. You need to make sure, like, where are the numbers? How do I get in contact with you if something's maybe minor or like major? And if you feel as though it is major, if you have any questions that something's wrong, just call 911 or just go immediately to the emergency room. Like, don't mess around. You can have your loved one call us on the way that you're headed there just to give us the heads up. That's great. You don't need my permission to do that. If you, like you said, be your own advocate, you feel like something's up, go. And I always feel like if somebody is coming back to the hospital, or if somebody, let's say years down the road, is coming back to my office saying that they have an issue, what benefit for them would it be to lie? Like, you've been minding your own business for years and now you're coming back. I'm going to take it seriously because it's an inconvenience to circle around and take time off of work and make this appointment. And I know how it all works because I'm a human too. And so we do the full testing and we take every single little thing very seriously. You're going to likely get a CAT scan. You're going to get full labs. You're going to get your vitals checked. You're going to get an exam. And then after all of that, okay, it's just gas. It's nothing. And then, okay, we can say that with confidence, but we don't dismiss those sorts of things. And hopefully your center would not either.
Exactly. That's some of the number one advice that we always give people, right? Like, you have to be confident in the people that you have chosen to have your surgery with. And you have to learn to advocate for yourself and your needs. And if you're not getting that level of support from who you have selected, maybe it's time that you go somewhere else, right? Like, you need to try on your bariatric centers like you try on jeans. Find the perfect fit, right? Because yes, you deserve that as a patient.
Oh, absolutely. You do for a host of reasons. Right. Okay. So that's right after surgery. So then you get home and now it's sort of like, you know, everybody has different responsibilities. Maybe you have pets, maybe you have to pick up all the Amazon boxes you're buying. Maybe you have kids and, you know, so there's like just juggling normal life while you're like, guys, do you guys remember I just had a major operation and this is weird and different and I'm just sore, get away. So there's just sort of, again, take care of yourself. Don't overstress yourself. If you need to rest. Sleep is super important and often untalked about. Mm-hmm. Movement, stretching, of course, nutrition, exercise, those are all key staples. Yep. After the first week, I would strongly, all caps, tell you to follow the diet progression. It's going to be weird. You might even crave something, let's say like lettuce. And you're like, what's the harm in eating a piece of celery, a piece of broccoli that's raw, or lettuce right now? I'm craving something like that. I hear this all the time. And some people, it's like, why did you eat a piece of broccoli? Because it can just get stuck. It can be uncomfortable. It's gassy. So whatever the diet is, don't puree up something like a steak that you know you shouldn't be doing. Like, don't do it. Like, just don't do it. Follow the diet to a T. It's 1 month. And I feel very strongly the people who do the best long-term are the ones that are on point in the short-term. And then you're setting your habits up. You're setting yourself up for success and you're going to see the results. And when you're like, man, did I just seriously drop 20 pounds in a month? And I think when that happens, then, you know, like, I can do this. Prove to yourself you can do it. Don't cheat in the beginning. Don't disobey the process. Yep. Prove to yourself you can do it.
Well, I mean, if you give yourself permission to not follow it in the very beginning, you're going to give yourself permission to not follow any of it for the rest of your life. So if you truly go into bariatric surgery committing to making a change, then you need to change how you've done everything in life. And if you say, oh, I'm going to break the rules a little bit now here, then you're going to break the rules forever. Yeah. Change your pattern in your very first week, because that's going to set you up for success further down the road. You just have to commit to making that change.
Yeah.
Jason, Dr. Dovick. Jason, what's your recommendation for week one post-op? What's the thing that you think is number one thing?
I stuck with the movement and also finding support, because I knew, like, right offhand, I was like, this could get kind of sketchy if I don't have other people around that know what I'm going through, because my wife was fantastic at helping me kind of do things, but without her understanding what I had been through, like, she'd gone to all the appointments with me and stuff, so she knew what to expect, but as far as, like, what I was actually feeling, I needed to hear from somebody that had gone through it. So I literally, you know, was on, that's how I found April, is I was on Instagram, I was on Facebook, I was on just Googling, I was on YouTube. I was trying to find support. I needed to know exactly what I was going through and to make sure it was good, because I didn't bother by, I mean, I was really, I had a fairly simple post-op, didn't really have any problems. So I never contacted my doctor at all. I went and saw him at the follow-ups, but I never talked to the office about anything that was happening. Once I was able to get into it, you know, kind of find a few people that I could follow and understand like what was going on, I felt more comfortable about everything. But finding support and making sure that I was still moving. And I was too scared to stray any of the diets. I was like, I'm not messing anything up. Like, no, ma'am, I'm a very black or white person. So I did not. I was like, it's this or that. Like, you know, when I see people are like,
ah. Oh, Jason froze.
It was the perfect place to freeze too, wasn't it, April?
Somebody tried to call me. Sorry about that. But when I see people cheat the liquid diet, I get scared. I'm like, you didn't know why? Why would you do that? Like, what happens now if you can't have surgery? Like, don't do that.
And just to tell you guys from a technical aspect of what I do, I mean, I am hand sewing with a piece of suture. It's a 2-0 vicryl stitch, if you want to know. I do it in 2 layers. I leak test it. These are little sutures. Can you give it a minute to heal a little bit? I mean, if you want to like test it and put a big bolus of food down there, that's going to like, I mean, I have seen horror stories of people just like going through drive-throughs on their way out of there. And I'll tell you, I do not think that any of my patients will ever, do anything but follow it to a T. I have no reason to believe that you're not going to take it seriously. None. I don't judge you. I don't think like typical. I knew it. I swear to God, I don't think that way at all about any of our patients. So if you think like, you know, the staff, I mean, this is expected that I'm going to like, I'll mess this up. Like I messed everything else up. I mean, that is the wrong mentality, my friends. We're going to always meet you over halfway, meet me too. And when you do, that's when the magic happens. You know, it's just, you've got to take this seriously.
Yep. Well, and I always recommend too, my first week after post-op, it was a very dark time for me. It's when I had to really confront like, oh, I have been using food in this way for all of these years. So when those dark or heavy emotions come up, don't shy away from them. Use this recovery time, use this downtime when you don't have a lot of energy for doing anything physical to start doing that mental work, because this is a golden opportunity for you to really acknowledge and understand the role that food has played in your life up to that point.
Yes. And it is time. And it's hard to do that because you're going to feel like, why am I punished? Everybody else is eating these things that I love and they're indulging in them. And my kids are doing it and I don't want to deprive them. And we have all this stuff. And then you're sitting there like, I mean, I've heard people like they say they'll like smell the cookie, they'll lick the cookie, they'll chew the cookie and spit it out. Like, just be done with it. And I know that it's easier said than done because sugar is 8 times more addictive than crack cocaine. So, you know, it's more addictive than heroin and it's a legitimate addiction and it's hard. And I also, I mean, we could go on a whole nother episode about this, but I also do not believe that you can do certain things in moderation. Like I talked about regular sodas earlier. I was absolutely addicted to cherry Coke, regular cherry Coke. In fact, the best was the regular Coke. And if they had like the syrup pump in it, like that was like my jam. I loved it. Like, give me the biggie size, give it all to me. And then one day I realized, and I wasn't like really that heavy, but I realized, man, I am drinking 2 liters of cherry Coke a day. And I am, and why am I doing this? Like, why is cherry Coke so worth it to me? I can tell you, I have for the last 15 years, I have never drank a cherry Coke again. And I can't, because it's like, okay, I have one today. It's like cigarettes. It's like any addiction. Like you already said, April, it's like you do a little bit here. And the next thing you know, this ball is like just snowballing and you're like, shoot, I'm back to 2 liters again. How did this happen? Again, you just validated in your mind that you deserve it and all these other things that we've already talked about. So I don't know. Some of those things, like once you get rid of them, don't ever tempt it again. Don't do it. You have to know what your triggers are so that you stay away from it. I might be able to eat like 3 M&Ms, but we'll say, Jason, if you had that, you might take down 3 bags. I mean, you got to know it, like what your triggers are. You got to stay away from them forever.
Yeah. I'm the same way with Mountain Dew. I was drinking four liters of that a day, easy. And yeah, I haven't touched it in 3 years now because I stopped a year before surgery because I knew I didn't want to go through post-op and caffeine withdrawals at the same time.
Yeah.
So yes. I kicked one, got ready and just kind of moved into the rest. Cause I know I can't go anywhere near it because I'd be the exact same way. Because if you think about it, you know, we're not supposed to have carbonated beverages, but Mountain Dew is the least carbonated out of all soda that there is. So I could drink it and it not mess with my stomach. The sugar content of it is ridiculous. So that's why I won't even go anywhere near it.
Well, and it's so interesting that you should say that, Dr. Dovick, because you really do understand your patients on a lot of different levels that maybe people just wouldn't assume, right? That pull to food and that trigger mechanism and what that can do to us. There's a lot of, I think, stigma in the weight loss surgery community and just in the world as whole is that, well, moderation and balance and all this great concepts, which work for some, not for all. Mm. So we really have to understand like what is going to lead us to long-term success. And if it's saying no to certain things for the rest of our lives, that is a price that we're going to pay for this very healthy, you know, weight and relationship with food after surgery. It's just, it's necessary for some of us and that's okay. We should be allowed to say that.
Absolutely. And, you know, going back to the self-love same. So let me tell you about personally what I do for self-love. So I absolutely follow the bariatric diet to a T. I'm perfect on it. I am. And I shouldn't say perfect because that's not what we're striving for. So let me delete that. I wish you could delete and edit this podcast. But when you're looking at like, okay, so looking at all the times long-term from 8-week follow-up, 6-month follow-up, 1 year beyond. It's so what is the diet? What are the fundamental kind of basics of this whole thing? Of course, it's about protein. It's about never skipping a meal. Please hear me, everyone. Don't skip meals. You're not going to be hungry. I mean, that's the whole thing. We're adjusting your hormone, your metabolism, your metabolic thing. I mean, all this stuff is happening. We're restricting the amount you can eat. We're making your stomach smaller. So yeah, you're not going to be overwhelmingly hungry, but you must eat 3 meals a day. I never skip meals. I eat protein at every meal. I never snack in between meals. I never grab a handful of chips here or do anything like that there. I don't get dessert. And you might be like, man, your life sounds so boring, but it's not. Because and then once you get away from it, I don't even want it anymore. And I don't know. I just feel like it is this ultimate self-love because I feel good. I drink 2 to 3 to 4 liters of fluid a day. I put Propel in it to flavor it up. I don't like regular water that much. And so it's just finding out your flavoring. If you want it ice cold, your temperatures, like just find your thing and you can be, you know, very compliant with it as well. And then I do a lot of surgery. So I run like 2 rooms. So I'll operate, in room 1, and then I'll go in room 2, and then I like stagger them so that I cut out the turnover. So to be able to do my job, I have to be very physically in shape. I have to have endurance to do it so that I don't come home and collapse and just want to sit there and eat and go for it. I want to keep going in the energy. So I walk every day. I do the stair climber. I like it because I like to read like self-help books and then like project all these little sayings onto you guys. And I don't know, just make myself better. And I think a lot of it is also about like your spiritual health, your mental health. Meditating is a big thing. And I even once a week go to this place called Stretch Zone and I have someone stretch out my legs and stuff like that, just to try to be as tip-top conditioned as possible. And there's even these places called like Human Performance Institutes. I just went to one and their whole thing is about making some of us like corporate athletes. Like, how do we're sitting all the time, but like if you're sitting, stand more. If you're standing, step forward. Like, how do you change your thinking when you have stress? How do you recovery? And how do you do and achieve things with both guts and with grace? And that's, I think, that's how I do my self-love for myself.
Well, and that's so interesting because you really are giving us some interesting ways to think about our wellness and our happiness from the lens of putting ourselves first. And we can do that while also thinking about our loved ones in our life, right? Like you're constantly thinking about not only your patients, but your kids and your husband. Like you have this other layer that comes with self-love. If I'm not at my peak performance, if I'm not happy and if I'm not well, I'm not well for my patients, nor for my children or my mm-hmm. husband. So you're constantly trying to find that balance. And it's okay to put yourself ahead of them in some aspects of your life so that you can be present for them as well. It's right. It's like, it's just a circle. You're never going to be, you know, catching up if you're always kind of leading on the leading edge of that. You're always there and present for everybody, including yourself, that needs to be, which is amazing.
Thank you so much. I just put this on my Instagram and it was just one little picture that my daughter drew. And she's like, this is you and me riding our bikes outside. You guys might've seen this on my Instagram post. And I don't know why it just really like choked me up. She drew these little hearts over her head because we were thinking about how much we loved it. And she's 5, but I just was thinking like, when people tell me, man, I want to be more active with my kids. I want to be more active in general. I want to ride that bike. I want to do that, but I can't. That's when you got to make some changes. And that made me happy that I realized like, man, her childhood is going to be better because I'm right there. I never thought about like riding the bike around the neighborhood as something that, oh, man, some people wouldn't be able to do that. And that's, and that crushes me. It is heartbreaking.
Dr. Dovick, we know our time with you is very short. Is there anything that you would like to pass on to our listeners or followers, any nugget of wisdom that you use to kind of help yourself push through these difficult moments, these times when you're questioning what you did or you're really struggling finding the motivation to keep going? Is there something that you really go to help you get through those difficult moments?
Yes. I always think of this saying as a little bit crude, so I hope you don't mind, but the first step and kicking ass is picking up your foot. Take that foot, lift it up, take the first step, move forward, get momentum, get going. Every little bit counts. Keep with the self-love. Not every day is going to be perfect, but tomorrow you're going to vow to make it better. keep kicking ass, my friends, and lean on your support with Berry Nation, with me, follow us, join this bariatric community. Let's start a revelation here, a revolution, and let's do it.
I love it. We cannot thank you enough for your time. Dr. Dovick, where can people connect with you?
Sure. So if you're interested in becoming one of my patients, you could go to adventhealthweightloss.com and click on Get Started Now, fill out the brief form, and we will contact you within 2 business days to schedule you for a virtual consultation, adventhealthweightloss.com. You can also follow me on Instagram. I am Dr. Dovek, D-R-D-O-V-E-C. Feel free to DM me. If you tag me, I'll probably repost it, all that good stuff. So I'm all about amplifying the message out there that these surgeries save lives and make life just so much better. So reach out to me in any capacity, and I can't wait to get to know you and to get to take care of you.
And we can say this from our personal experience: the person behind Dr. Dovick's Instagram is Dr. Dovick. So- yes.
Some of it's lame. I'm getting old, guys. I mean, I'm trying to like I'm doing reels. Like I told you, I mean, is anybody watching? It's like cringeworthy, but I'm trying to stay relevant. Okay. Like my stuff, please.
Jason, I can say this, you know, with true honesty, what matters to us is your willingness to be human and engage with us on our very personal level. So despite all the glitz and glam in the reels, we just appreciate you being you and dedicating your time and your life and your energy to making bariatric stories known and to helping people find their happy, healthy weight. That's what we are all about. So glitz and glam aside, nope, it's just you. We're just interested in you and how you're here to help and support us. So thank you very much.
Thank you, April. Thank you, Jason.
This has been amazing. If you would like to know more about Dr. Dovick, absolutely reach out to her. Seeking out and finding community to help you through this journey is something that all three of us are passionate about. Advent Health has that type of community. If you're not an Advent Health patient, or if you're just looking for a different layer of support, we have our own membership community where we connect bariatric patients to experts and other patients so that they can learn and grow along their bariatric journey. Just visit www.berrynation.com, or you can send us a DM and it's us behind that as well. We're happy to share with you about the amazing community. It's filled with support groups, classes, on-demand opportunities, live synchronous events. There's a lot going on there in Berry Nation. So we're happy to give you a tour and tell you more about that. Jason, my friend, would you like to take us out?
Yes, ma'am. Dr. Dovick, thank you again for all your time, support. It means the world to us. We appreciate it. And to our friends and followers, thank you guys so much for all the support that you guys have given us. We couldn't do what we do without you guys helping. So don't forget, you can like, share, subscribe, continue to do those things. Rate us on your favorite podcast player. You can leave us reviews on YouTube as well. And past that, just remember, at the end of the day, you've got this, we've got you, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, guys.